Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin.
And we're back on a Monday.
Yes.
It's been an eventful weekend.
To say the very least.
Yeah, it's been a tough weekend in a lot of regards. And we're going to be talking about everything that happened in Charlottesville for sure. But let's go through what we're going to be discussing today. So, of course, we start off with listener feedback and some general updates. Then we're going to get into what transpired in Charlottesville. We have a whole long block of that and lots of things to discuss there. Block three is our gratitude check. And then following that, we have our dickwad of the week is the next block. And then finally, we have some action items, so stuff you can do after you listen to the show. Okay, Devin, so let's get into some listener feedback and updates on our end. So what's the first thing we've got today?
So one of our listeners at
L.L. Kellner.
L.L. Kellner, thank you.
It's hard to read with all the L's and the K.
Right, yeah. Is it an I?
Yeah.
said, quote, "Thanks for making my morning commutes more fun. You can really change the direction of my day." And that really means a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
I think we're really glad that we can have that kind of a positive impact.
Absolutely.
Especially with so much going on. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot. Just doing the podcast in a lot of ways is very therapeutic. And just being able to talk about it.
Right.
It's, you know, a lot of ways a form of self-care.
Yeah, for me, definitely.
Just to talk everything out. So we really appreciate that, like, two-way conversation.
Yes.
So thank you, at L.L. Kellner. We also got a tweet from at Rolly Tonks, who said, quote, "Just listening again about the quote-unquote big event on August 22nd, full solar eclipse on August 21st. Coincidence?" And for those unaware of the context, I've talked about this a couple times on the podcast, but I saw a post back in maybe January or February from a Facebook group I'm in about how, like, they went to some, like, psychic convention, I think, and they said that, like, all the psychics were in agreement that something big will happen to Trump.
Hey.
Specifically, something big will happen to him on August 22nd. And as people have pointed out, like, to be fair, at least 10 big things happen to him on any given day.
That's true.
So really it could just be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like,
hey,
you know, like 1 + 1 = 2.
Right. But we still have a Hellbent, like, calendar event.
Listen, I did make a Google calendar reminder back in January or February, whenever it was, and it's been on my calendar.
Yep. So who knows?
So yeah, August 22nd. We'll see.
Stay tuned.
See what happens to Trump on August 22nd.
So now we're going to talk about some changes
on
our end to the show. We've been kind of thinking about this for a while, but we're going to take out the Maxine Waters update and award and badassery category. It's not because we don't love Maxine, because, you know.
We do.
We do. But we were really moved by an article that Feminista Jones wrote called Mammy 2.0, Black Women Won't Save You, So Stop Asking.
Yeah, so here's a little excerpt. She said, quote, "In 2017, we've experienced a reemergence of reliance upon Mammy, except this time it manifests on social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook. You see us, Black women, as the perpetual supplier of digital comfort and salvation. You regard us as wise, we are. You acknowledge our strength, we can be. And you try to position us as wells from which you can drink and be filled with refreshingly new points of view that make you feel better about being white. You can't." And then she sort of talks about Maxine Waters' newfound popularity as sort of like a manifestation of all that.
Right.
Sort of an example of what she's talking about.
Yeah, we don't really want to perpetuate this sort of insidious demand on Black women's labor or unintentionally fetishize it.
Yeah.
Through something that may seem innocuous or fun on the surface.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, when I read this piece initially, it made me uncomfortable as fuck.
Oh, I literally squirmed in my seat
because,
when I read it.
And you know why it was? Because I recognized myself.
Exactly.
And what we were doing on Hellbent in it. And I think that, you know, I've said this a lot, and I don't even mean this in, like, a grand scale. I mean this also, like, personally. You know, progress and growth never starts at a comfortable place.
Absolutely.
And so I think it is good for us to constantly get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And to recognize that discomfort and to self-reflect and to think and change and make adjustments. And that's what Devin and I have decided to do.
Yes.
You know, that's... Yeah, we've thought about it a lot. We've done a lot of talking amongst each other.
Right.
And this is sort of the decision we came to.
I mean, I'm sure we're going to still be talking about Maxine Waters a bunch. She is doing amazing work.
Yeah.
And, you know, is still on, you know, Chris Hayes making him raise his eyebrows into his hairline. So I'm sure that will be...
We will, yeah. It's not the end of talking about Maxine Waters.
No.
But we did want to take away that categorization, like Devin said, so we're not sort of getting to the point of fetishizing
right
what she's doing. So that's our rationale. We felt like it was important to talk about it, be open about it.
Right.
So you may have noticed when we were saying what we're going to talk about in the show, we will still be doing a Dickwad of the Week.
Right.
We kind of renamed it Dickwad of the Week. We felt like we could simplify it.
Yeah, and kind of keep it all on... keep it consistent mm-hmm. from Monday to Thursday.
Yeah, so we're going to still do a Dickwad of the Week on Mondays, and we've changed the name to the sort of what was known as the Maxine Waters Award in Badassery. It's now Hellion of the Week.
Yes.
As you know, Hellion means troublemaker, and, you know, well-behaved women seldom make history.
That is
so
true.
So that felt appropriate. So we're still going to be doing that on Thursdays. And like Devin said, regardless, we'll probably still be highlighting Maxine's work because it is good and important, but we felt like, you know, putting her on this pedestal,
right,
while it seemed sort of innocuous, like Devin said, might actually have some unintentional harm.
Yeah.
So that was our decision, but we feel pretty confident in that decision.
Yeah. I think, like Sarah had said, this is something that we've been talking about for a while, and then just sort of reading this and the sort of, it really
kind of cemented it. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
And then so this week on Patreon, our bonus pod is actually something a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm going to be chatting with Hellion Olivia about all things legal as it relates to Trump.
Yeah.
Especially in regards to impeachment versus indictment. So we'll be putting that up on Tuesday. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun conversation. Sarah was like, it'll be a la phone a friend on call your girlfriend.
Because Devin's only doing it.
Right.
I was going to participate, but the reason why I'm not is because my headaches have returned. I went to a rally yesterday in support of what has been happening in Charlottesville, and we ended up, I guess, marching for a mile and a half, and mm-hmm. for some reason, I'm at this stage where even light activity, like walking, can bring about headaches.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's definitely something that has been, you know, something I've had to square with. Like, how does my sort of activism like, how does it work with me taking care of myself? I don't really always have that answer, but I am glad that I went. So, it, you know, even though I'm not feeling great today, it felt worth it. And so Devin's going to be doing that Patreon. So I'm going to go home, take some, you know, cincture or whatever it's called, or whatever, put on some medical marijuana cream and then take a nap, I think, after. Okay, Devin, so let's get into the main thing we're going to be talking about today, which is the violence in Charlottesville at the hands of white supremacists. So can you take us through sort of what happened on Friday and Saturday, and then we can sort of talk through some reactions to that from there?
Yes. So this started Friday night. A group of hundreds of mostly white men, including Richard Spencer, gathered in the night with tiki torches on the campus of University of Virginia in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
They chanted things like, "You will not replace us," and "Jew will not replace us," which, very clever.
Very subtle.
Very clever, guys. Like,
really, really doing the most to not try to act like fucking Nazis.
Yeah, right? Like, that's great. And then as Eve Ewing said on Twitter, quote, "They don't even feel like they need to wear hoods. They're all confident that they'll have jobs on Monday."
Yeah, I think that says a lot.
It does.
But it's interesting because there is efforts to, because they've unmasked themselves.
Right.
To identify them.
Right, and get their identities out there.
And I think at least a few of them have been fired from their jobs. And there's like a whole fucking, it's interesting. There's this whole debate on whether that's like.
Okay.
Okay, but I mean, the thing is like, if you're showing yourself in public.
Right.
You
like, don't have an expectation of privacy.
Right. I mean, you know, what do you think journalists are going to do? Not identify you?
Right.
And it's like, you know, if you're not proud of what you're doing,
yeah,
then maybe rethink what you're doing. Like, I've seen this point made on Twitter, but it's like, I've gone to like healthcare rallies,
right,
and like the Women's March. I wasn't ever like, oh no, my employer will find out
exactly
about the things that I stand for that are
right
good,
that are worth it. Exactly. So like, look at your life, look at your choices, and if you are going to these rallies, again, whether it's KKK rally or Women's March, assume that people are going to know that you're there.
Okay, so going back to what happened on Friday, so that demonstration on Friday night turned violent, and these like white supremacist assholes surrounded the counter protesters, and from what I had seen on Twitter as it was happening on the ground, they started beating some of them,
yeah,
with the tiki torches.
But
so it had already turned at least tense and violent on Friday, and just so for some additional context, the protest was billed as quote Unite the Right. And it was sort of a culmination of a year and a half of debate in Charlottesville over the fate of the Robert E. Lee statue. A movement to remove it had begun when an African-American high school student started a petition in Charlottesville. The city council voted 3-2 in April to sell it, but a judge issued an injunction temporarily stopping the move.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of like debate around these monuments, and that is ostensibly the reason why
there was this
quote-unquote rally.
Okay, so, you know, and it's really hard not to juxtapose the way police treated these white supremacist quote-unquote protesters with how quick police were to use force against peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters or the water protesters in Standing Rock.
The water protectors.
Water protectors.
Yeah.
Protesting the pipeline,
mm-hmm,
the Dakota Access Pipeline. If, you know, for even more context here, 155 people were arrested in Ferguson and only 4 people were arrested in Charlottesville.
Yeah, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can, but like, when you put the number
right
to it, it's a stark contrast. And I too, I'm thinking specifically of that famous photo from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, of that woman in a flowing dress, like looking calm and almost serene in the face of police in head-to-toe riot gear rushing toward her in an aggressive way.
Yeah.
But then you see, you know, like you compare that to an army of white people, mostly men, but again, there was some white women there too, marching with like goddamn tiki torches and being left alone for
yeah
the most part. And, you know, like DeRay tweeted on Twitter, obviously tweeted on Twitter. he was like, if that were black people with tiki torches on a college campus, the National Guard would have basically been called immediately.
Oh, absolutely.
There was no way.
No.
And actually, before we get into Saturday, but I did see a video of on Saturday, there was a bunch of these quote unquote Unite the Right quote-unquote protesters, white supremacist assholes, who were pushing the police line. Like, they were literally getting in police officers' faces,
right,
and, like, pushing against them. Like, and nothing was being done.
Right.
Like, there's no fucking way that Black Lives Matter protesters would have been able to even get near them.
Exactly. There'd be no pushing the police line. Moving on to Saturday.
Right. Which I got into a little bit, but that just kind of reminded me.
Right. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday afternoon, a planned protest turned violent again with a car running down a horde of people, killing one and injuring many others. So the woman who died after being mowed down was Heather Hare.
Mm-hmm.
And the man who killed her and hurt many others has been identified as 20-year-old James Alex Fields Jr.
And let's be clear, this guy's a terrorist.
Oh, 100%.
And I think that we'll get into the president's reaction, but the president's reaction is very telling.
Yeah.
But he is a terrorist. He tried to kill people.
Right. In a public setting, mm-hmm, to make people afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That would be terror.
That's
terrorism.
That's terrorism.
Yeah.
And also, I believe a couple of police officers had died from a helicopter crash.
Oh, wow.
Because they were trying to help out on the scene.
Wow.
So a couple of other police officers died as well, but not via that car crash.
Right.
That car ramming into people. So I just want to give some like additional context to this, because we've talked about this on the podcast a little bit, but remember that Republicans in several state legislators are trying to protect drivers who mow down protesters.
Yep.
They've introduced bills that have basically said it's okay It's essentially okay to kill protesters.
Right, right.
Like, honestly.
Well, and at least 18 states have proposed legislation that would make it harder to protest.
Yeah.
And there was a UN commission that basically said that the rights of U.S. protesters, this was back a couple of months, we talked about it on the pod, basically the rights of U.S. protesters were in jeopardy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I remember that.
Yeah. So wow. This is serious. Mm-hmm. This is very serious.
Yeah, and actually, you know, Sarah Kendzior, she had tweeted something about how toward the beginning of the Trump administration, they had cut funding for research on white supremacist terrorists and extremist groups. And so none of this is happening in a vacuum.
Right.
And I will also say, too, on Saturday, sort of near the protests and counter-protests, a black man named Dre Harris was also beaten up in a parking garage by a bunch of dudes with poles. And he suffered some pretty serious injuries, and it happened right next to a local police department, but no police officers were there to help. So again,
Jesus,
you know, part, like, there's a lot, I think, to contend with here, but I do think there is a pretty clear juxtaposition of how police act when it's Black Lives Matter protesters or water protectors, for example, versus how they act when it's a bunch of white dudes.
Right.
White people, really, but mostly white dudes. And some of them were even, like, head to toe, like, dressed as, like, militia and, like, were, right, like, open carrying and, like, were, like, apparently they were calling out, like, military commands, like, retreat. And,
right.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and then, of course, it turned violent.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it's just the sort of systemic and institutional racism. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so blatant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not...
It's clear as day.
It's clear as day. It's, they're not even trying to hide. These guys, these protesters, mostly white men, but they're not covering their faces. They're not worried about people knowing who they are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. They definitely feel emboldened,
right,
by this administration. It's, right, not like Trump invented racism.
No, I mean, God, no.
This certainly not, but we're entering an era where people feel even more emboldened. And like Eve Ewing said, they didn't even feel the need to put on masks.
Right.
They were just like, hi.
This is what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the reactions. Okay. Fucking Trump. You know, after staying silent on those Minnesota mosque bombing, I think a lot of people were wondering if Trump would even say anything at all about Charlottesville. I mean, this is the same dude who made up a fake terrorist attack in Sweden.
In Sweden. Oh, my God. And then Bowling Green, of course.
Well, Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah. Trump administration.
Uh-huh. So people were like, okay, what is he going to say something? What is he even going to say? Well, he did. And predictably, it was some bullshit.
Yep.
So first, Trump tweeted, quote, "We all must be united and condemn all that hate stands for. There is no place for this kind of violence in America. Let's come together as one." First of all, I want to say, let's come together as one? Fuck no. I'm not coming together with any motherfucking Nazis.
Right.
Like, you can bet my Jewish ass. I'm not coming together with any fucking Nazis. Oh, like, that is not happening.
Oh. I mean, it was such a vague statement.
And I think it was intentionally vague.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it really allowed white supremacists to interpret it however they damn well please.
And even, you saw even on some of their message boards.
Yeah.
Like, they were, like, kind of applauding it. They're
right.
Like, see, he's not talking about us.
Right.
Or they twisted it and were like, oh yeah, he's talking about Antifa. And it's
right.
Like, no. You motherfuckers were the ones who got violent. You motherfuckers are the terrorists.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so it's also, I think, notable that Trump has come out pretty strongly and very specifically against violent acts by non-white people.
Right.
He has not been shy to do that when it comes to people who aren't white supremacists.
Oh, 100%. Like, he is quick.
He's quick on the trigger.
On the trigger.
He makes up fake fucking terrorist attacks in Sweden.
Exactly.
To the point where, like, Swedish officials are like, what the fuck are you even talking about? This is not a thing that actually happened.
Right.
Actually, someone had reminded me of that, and I was like, it's one of those things I'm like, I forgot about that.
Yeah. I know. We talked about it, I think, on our last podcast, and you were like, oh, yeah, shit.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
there's so many egregious things.
And, it, you know, Trump is so quick to use the strongest, most polarizing language on his Twitter,
mm-hmm,
at random speeches.
For anyone who criticizes
for
him.
Anything. And then this bullshit, like, white bread statement that he puts out.
But it's, like, not surprising at the
same
time.
It's not.
It's not surprising.
We're not fucking surprised.
It's so telling.
Yeah.
Right? Then after he tweeted... He said, quote, We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides.
On many sides?
Fuck many sides.
Fuck you. Like, fuck you.
I mean, again, totally and utterly unsurprising that he'd like both sides the shit out of this. But like, come on. Even Republicans like Jeff Flake, Mike Huckabee, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, like a whole host of others specifically called out white supremacists. And that should be, like, the bare minimum.
Right.
Although, okay, let's be clear about these assholes, too.
Right.
Okay? These assholes, like Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, Marco Rubio, Jeff Flake, they'd still dog whistle till the end of days to get these same people's votes.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, if they put out dog whistles, Trump puts out wolf howls. Like, there's not much that's that different. You know? They're just dressed up in sort of more civil language.
Right, right. Well, and they're more
politically inclined.
This is kind of what we talked about with Melissa McEwen last week. Right. Like, the reason why Pence is so dangerous is because he's just as bad. Right. And or worse than Trump, but he has this veneer of respectability.
Exactly.
And so that's kind of what these guys are doing. They're using that veneer.
And also, you know, I have a very hard time believing that these dudes truly they're truly opposed to white supremacy.
Oh,
their
no.
whole party is suppressing the shit out of people of color's votes.
Right.
Like, let's be very clear about that. I'm like, listen, if you want to back up your talk with actions, here's a whole list of things you can do that you are not willing to do.
Right.
Because it is not politically expedient for you.
Right.
But to call this out, you know, is politically expedient.
Right, exactly. I mean, they're basically...
Because it's, like, the easiest thing to do.
Right.
Like, what Trump is not doing... Like, this is, like, literally a softball question.
Yeah.
Like, call out Nazis and white supremacists.
Right.
Like that is pretty, like...
Like, I'm going to give you political points for literally doing for the one thing that everybody can do.
But he won't do it because those are the people that rode him to victory.
Yeah, it's his base. I mean, he refused to answer a question from reporters on if this car attack was terrorism.
Yeah,
he just straight up refused.
He just, like, walked away.
Yeah.
He just didn't answer. He ignored it. And, you know, so obviously with these, like, slew of statements and actions, journalists were, like, seeking additional follow-up. Because, again, easiest thing to do.
Right.
Disavow Nazis and white supremacists.
We're going to give you political points for, like, the basics.
The bare fucking minimum. To which an anonymous spokesperson said that it was obvious that Trump condemned, quote, white supremacists, KKK, neo-Nazi, and all extremist groups. Except he never said those things. So why would it be obvious?
Right.
If it's so obvious, why isn't he saying it?
Exactly. And throwing in all extremist groups.
Oh, right.
Like,
that's another both sides.
You couldn't just, both sides the shit out of this. Like, you couldn't just leave it at neo-Nazis.
He's trying to make, like, Antifa or Black Lives Matter.
Right.
He's trying to equate those groups with groups that are actually extreme.
Exactly. And actual terrorists. So on a related note, David Duke, former KKK Grand Wizard and racist motherfucker extraordinaire.
Yep.
Said, quote,
that's what it says on his business cards.
Racist motherfucker extraordinaire.
Call me.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Oh. Said, quote, we're going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump to take our country back. And this is what Make America Great Again is all about.
Yeah.
Going back to a time when white people had a more dominant grip on society.
Well, this is, I mean, it was interesting because during the campaign, an interesting question that reporters had asked was, okay, when was America great?
Right.
And if people said, oh, the 1950s or this, it's like, well, it wasn't so great for a lot of groups. And it still isn't great.
Right.
It still isn't great for a lot of groups, but it was especially not great.
Right, in the 50s.
And so, like, it does remind me of that sort of phrase, when you're accustomed to privilege, equality feels like oppression. We're not even, like, anywhere close to full equality.
Right. And they're like, oh, white men are oppressed.
Well, there was a great thread that went around Twitter that was talking about, like, imagine if these guys were actually oppressed.
Right.
Like, how they would actually feel.
Right.
And it just sort of, like, went down a whole list of things that are not happening to them, but are happening to other groups.
Yeah.
And the thing I think they feel oppressed about, quote-unquote oppressed, is that there are other voices.
Right.
And we're moving ever so slowly to equality. We're not even...
Snail's pace.
We're not even close. But just those sort of baby steps is enough to make them feel threatened. Because, like you said, they don't have as dominant of a grip on society as they used to. And that's what they talk about when they say make America great again.
Right.
What it really means is make everyone you know, below us in every single way.
Yeah. I mean, imagine sucking so hard as a person that being a white man feels oppressive.
Well, but that's the thing. It's like they are trying to turn themselves into victims, right, and they're anything but that. And
right.
They have no understanding of what it's actually like to actually be oppressed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does remind me of last August. Do you remember that speech Hillary Clinton made? It was a whole thing about the quote-unquote alt-right and how Trump's campaign was emboldening mm-hmm. white supremacists and hate groups. And, you know, again, she was right.
Yeah, but, you know, she called them a basket of deplorables. So, like, how could she?
This is what drives me bananas. Part of what drives me bananas is she told the truth.
Yeah.
And a woman telling the truth is seen as negative.
Right.
Seen as not having a message. And a lot of people heard her loud and clear. A lot of people saw loud and clear what Trump, the candidate, would mean as Trump the president.
Right.
You know, and I think she even said this in her speech, like, there is no pivot. Like, right. This is who he is. This yes. is how he's going to govern. And again, all this racism and violence isn't the product of Trump in and of itself. It's just his presidency has emboldened them.
Right.
Even more.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's not like that ever went away. It's not like that ever element ever went away, but he has emboldened it to greater degrees.
Absolutely.
I think
one of my favorite Aziz Ansari quotes, mm-hmm. he was doing a comedy set, and he was like, the Trump administration has just made it okay for racists to come out of the closet.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not that they weren't racist before. Mm-hmm. It's like, now that they're allowed to be out of the closet, he's like, no, go back in the closet.
But it's like, but even like this out and out racism
right.
was still happening.
Absolutely.
Before Trump came.
But so and now, but they feel like it can be
but a, like, an even but larger platform. But like Eve Ewing said, we don't need to wear hoods anymore.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So.
They feel like they can still keep their jobs and
yeah.
there won't be any consequences. And, you know, everything that happened this weekend and everything that's been happening since Trump announced his candidacy is why I never want to hear anyone, especially Democrats, yeah. say that Trump voters aren't racist or they're just hurting economically or that we should, you know, try to reach out to them and understand them or we should shelve identity politics.
AKA civil rights.
Civil rights. But then also at the same time, everything is quote unquote identity politics.
Everything.
Right? Like white men marching.
That's identity politics.
With tiki torches and like saying that you will not replace us, Jew will not replace us. That's identity politics.
Right. It's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit. And it's like, I think that people trying to excuse away mm-hmm. what Trump sort of ran on
right.
and what he, like we said, he emboldened, does everyone a disservice. Like,
right.
there's not a strong enough quote-unquote economic message in the world that's going to get through to Trump voters.
Right.
And I think us pretending that there is doesn't help anything.
Oh, not even a little bit.
You know?
And, you know, this argument that I keep hearing is basically like, well, you can't call these people Nazis. That'll just make them Nazis.
That is my least favorite thing.
I know.
I'm like, listen, if there's enough... If me calling a Nazi is enough to make him a Nazi,
they were already a Nazi.
Probably already a Nazi.
Right.
And then there was a great, what was that tweet from Alexandra Aaron?
She said,
she puts it perfectly.
This is beautiful. She said, quote, feminists have been called Nazis for decades and haven't unfurled a swastika flag yet.
Yes, exactly. Like, do you know how many times, like, these assholes have called feminists feminazis?
Feminazis.
But, like, that didn't make me go, you know what?
You're right.
I'm going to get a swastika tattoo
yep.
or going to unfurl a flag.
Right. Or I'm going to try to reclaim the swastika pattern.
No.
No, that's not a thing. Also, Trump has goddamn certified Nazis in the White House. Hi. Good morning. They're
yes.
already there.
Yes.
Like.
Zeb Gorka is legit a Nazi.
Certified. A fucking certified Nazi.
Certified Nazi. And, you know, Steve Bannon is a white supremacist asshole. Stephen Miller is a white supremacist asshole. I mean, there are, again.
And those are just the ones that have come out and said it. I'm sure there are way more just
yeah.
hanging around the halls of the White House these days.
That's the thing. I'm like, we have had Nazis in the White House. And like They've been allowed to be there.
Right.
The fact that they are still there says so much about
that they're
our
not,
society.
Yep. They don't need to wear hoods anymore because mm-hmm. they'll still have jobs on
they're
Monday.
They're wearing suits.
They're wearing suits.
They're wearing suits. And interestingly enough, speaking of reactions, Jeff Sessions, who is also a racist
motherfucker
extraordinaire.
Put that on some fucking business cards.
He announced that the DOJ will be investigating what transpired in Charlottesville, which I was like kind of surprised about. I was like,
yeah,
what?
Sure.
And I think even Ted Cruz called for the DOJ
right.
to investigate.
And you're like, we are living in the upside down here.
But here's the thing. Because when he announced it, I was like,
no.
So, former head of the DOJ's Civil Rights Division, so she served under Obama, Vinita Gupta said, quote, "This is narrow. There is much more to investigate. There is no mention that it is a hate crime or domestic terror investigation." So
right.
It's basically the bare skeleton bone minimum.
Right.
Like, it's just like going through the motions,
right.
It feels like.
Right. I think we should also talk about some reactions from our side of the aisle.
Yes.
On Friday night, we saw a lot of people memeify that photo of the dudes carrying tiki torches.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get it. It's Twitter. And that photo of the dude, you know, and people are trying to let off steam, but turning this kind of shit into a joke or pretending like these guys are losers or outside the mainstream is just unhelpful and wrong.
And I like the point, again, we're going to bring up Eve Ewing because she's brilliant. She had a great point and a good thread about this mindset. She said, quote, "Stop making this out to be fringe. It's not. These Charlottesville people are not just the fringes of society. I assure you they are part of society and enact these ideals every day. KKK leaders historically weren't quote-unquote losers in a basement. They were police. They were shop owners. Before he was a senator, Robert Byrd started a chapter. It's easier to brush off Charlottesville protesters as losers than to face the reality that these folks live and work all around us."
Yeah.
And I think that is a really good point.
Right.
It's like, the reason why these sort of racist, I don't even want to call them ideals.
No.
That's not the right word. But the reason why racism has been able to flow throughout society for so many decades and centuries is because it is deeply layered into every aspect of our society.
It's systemic.
It's systemic.
And you know, it's like the blood has been poisoned. Like, mm-hmm. the blood in your body has been poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the level of difficulty it is to get out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Brittany Packnett, who has appeared on Hellbent before, she's an activist. She also contributes to Pod Save the People. She had a lot of really great tweets this weekend. But I like what she said here. She said, "I know it's hard to hear, but white supremacy benefits all white people, including the ones with no torches. That's why it survives."
Yeah. I mean, I think
she put it better than we tried to right now.
Absolutely. 100%. Go read Brittany Packnett on Twitter because she's saying all of this, but better. You know, we're going to have some action items at the end of the show. But I think it's important for us as white people who believe in civil rights and equality to not think that we're outside of white supremacy or to reply with hashtag not all white people or hashtag this is not us.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that? I think Lady Gaga started it.
Yeah.
There's this whole like, this is not America. And it's like, this is very distinctly
This is very
American.
And we are centering our own fragile baby feelings when, you know, when folks say that this is white supremacy, because it is.
Yeah.
Take yourself out of the fucking narrative.
I've seen people say, oh, and it's sort of similar to, oh, you can't call these people Nazis because that'll just make them Nazis. No,
no.
They were already Nazis.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, the answer to combating this isn't to try to be more polite.
Yes.
It's to get even more impolite in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, I think a lot of it too is, I can't remember who said this, but it's like, there's no indication that like history books have failed us other than this, like, this is hashtag, this is not us.
Right.
Cause it's like, there are people, you know, who what we have been taught is a sort of glossed over version
100%.
Of history. And it's like, this is distinctly American and it's still happening and it's been happening. And,
I think it's on us to examine how we might perpetuate racism, especially in its these very insidious forms.
Yeah.
Like hashtag this is not us.
Mm-hmm.
And then do the hard work to help dismantle these oppressive systems.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think when you get called out or when you see something written that makes you feel defensive, you know, I think it's hard for people because people generally want to see themselves as good people.
Absolutely.
And I get it. Doesn't mean you're a bad person per se. It just means you have a lot to learn. And I think I've actually found that letting go of that wall of defensiveness takes less energy.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
It's so much, it's actually takes so much less energy to be like, okay, this is a thing and I'm going to learn from it and I'm going to try to do better and I'm going to not be that white person.
Right.
And
right.
We've all been there. We've all, like, Devin and I have been that white person several times over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, recently. I mean, this is something that you constantly have to recognize in yourself. And like Sarah said, like dropping that defensive wall
yeah.
and saying like, I did this. Like, how can I make it better? How can I do better? How can we be better? Okay, Sarah, so let's get into our gratitude check. Mm-hmm. Sorely needed. So, Sarah, what are you grateful for?
So I only have one gratitude check today, but it's a good one. Mm-hmm. I came across a Facebook post from June from a woman named Laura B. Sharp. And I'm going to read the full story because it's just glorious, like the whole thing. Okay, so she writes, quote, two 26-year-old guys at the table next to me, probably named Chip and Biff. They're interviewing a young woman of similar age. It sounds like it's for an office manager position. The interview ends, she leaves, and Chip says, quote, she's not much to look at, you know? Biff agrees and reminds Chip that they'd have to look at her for 8 hours a day and says, quote, she's too fat. They laugh. They type on their gadgets. Then a woman, about 45, comes to the table, says her name, shakes their hands, and asking if they wouldn't mind please excusing her for a moment, and she goes into the cafe. So I guess this is like another person interviewing for the job.
For the job.
Biff and Chip start laughing and saying, oh my God, no, to each other several times. Chip says, imagine her. She's so super old. Biff says, no way. And Chip starts laughing harder and says, but just imagine that old bitch in our office. They continue laughing. Biff says, no fucking way, dude. I wouldn't hire that old lady to do my laundry. They continue laughing. I get up, go into the cafe, find the woman in the ladies' room, and I introduce myself and I say, brace yourself, sister, because I'm going to tell you what I just overheard. She's stunned. She says, what should I do? I need a job. I say, no matter what you do, you aren't getting that job. That interview is a waste of your time. She asked me, what would you do? I said, if I knew what you knew, I'd go out there and stand over them, looking them up and down a bit too long with a hard expression on my face, and then I'd announce that I wasn't interested in interviewing for the position because I don't want to work for anyone with such little life experience. I'd say my days of babysitting are over. I'd say I prefer a manager who knows how to do their own laundry and wipe their own ass, and I'd tell them that they both stink of pimple cream. And then I'd saunter off with my old ass fucking nose in the fucking air. But that's just me. I'm a mean old bitch. But you're you. Whatever you do, I'm sitting right there and I've got your back, sis. I go back to my table. 2 minutes later, she appears and she follows my advice. Exactly. I smile at her. Chip and Biff are stunned and speechless, and they look like scolded little boys. She begins her saunter and they're just staring at her, mouths open. And as she passes my table, she pauses and motions for me to give her a high five. I stand up, high five her, hug her, and we laugh. I sit back down and Chip and Biff are looking at me. And I say to them, what the fuck are you two little dickheads looking at? Maybe now you'll learn to be more fucking afraid of the invisible middle-aged woman. Because we are everywhere. And even if you aren't seeing us, you better fucking believe that we are always fucking watching you. Then weirdly, they silently and rapidly packed up their gadgets and scurried away.
That was beautiful.
This is one of my favorite stories. Because it's like two dickwads being complete assholes in every single way. And you know, she's out in the open
and blatantly.
And she sort of explained this, in her Facebook post. She's like, I've gotten a lot of guys saying that this is like mean and it's a revenge story. She's like, no, this is a story about sisterhood and women having each other's backs. So don't make this about you and your little man feelings. Like, just be better.
Yeah.
And appreciate that two women had each other's backs.
Yeah.
And that, oh man, I just love this story.
I know.
So great.
Yeah, like,
so
be better.
Just like Michelle Obama said,
right,
be better.
Right. Don't be dickwads in the middle of a coffee shop.
Well, that's the thing. It's like they feel like they can say all this shit.
Right. And just get away with it.
And just because they usually can.
Right.
And
exactly.
This woman was like, no. Oh, you didn't see me, but I fucking saw you.
Right.
And I handed you your ass.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I love this story. So that's my gratitude check for today. Devin, what are you grateful for?
So I also just have one for today. And this is one that I saw actually on our Facebook group. And it was Hillary Clinton's pastor's email to her after she lost the election.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I'm not even like a religious person.
I'm not either.
And it's a whole thing because you can be, being Jewish is very much a cultural thing.
Right.
So I still consider myself Jewish. And
right.
I went to Jewish school and all this stuff and no prayers and all this stuff. But I myself consider myself agnostic.
Right.
In terms of my faith.
Yeah.
But I was tearing up when I read this.
Oh yeah. I'm not really a religious person either. I don't know if I'd say agnostic, but like I was just bawling by the end of this. So The Reverend Bill Shalady, who's Hillary's pastor, really knows how to write an inspirational message.
And this is the note he wrote to her the day after the election, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. So he's actually writing a book with all of the daily devotionals he sent her during the campaign,
oh, wow.
which I will buy and read and cry.
Yeah.
but so the basic premise of this email is that this loss is devastating, but that there is always light at the end of the tunnel. He called it her Friday.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read from it. He said, quote, "For us, Friday is the phone call from the doctor that the cancer is back. It's the news that you have lost your job. It's the betrayal of a friend, the loss of someone dear. Friday is the day that it all falls apart and all hope is lost. We all have Fridays. But as the saying goes, Sunday's coming." Oof. So this refers to when Jesus was executed.
Mm.
And then he returned on a Sunday.
Gotcha.
So it was like Savior. He was the Savior on Sunday.
Gotcha.
So it, in light of everything that's happened in Trump's presidency, and especially this past fucking weekend,
mm-hmm.
It can feel like everything is trash and nothing will ever get better. And that's kind of how I feel right now. But what I loved about this particular email was not just the message of hope that things can get better, but rather the message about how hard things can be in the interim.
Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, "You know, one of my favorite sayings is God doesn't close one door without opening another, but it can be hell in the hallway. My sister Hillary, you, our nation, our world is experiencing a Black Friday. Our hope is that Sunday is coming, but it might well be hell for a while."
Yeah, really powerful. I would read the whole thing. We're going to link to it in our show notes.
It's really beautiful. And I think for me, it just, it obviously in a political context, like this is really beautiful and mm-hmm. like helping her get through this like devastating loss.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really beautiful. It might be hell in the hallway for a while. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we have a listener gratitude check. So, Sarah, do you want to tell us?
Yeah, so our listener gratitude check comes courtesy of Kelly. She wrote in our Facebook group, "Friends, I was at the counter protest today," so she meant on Saturday, "and I just have to say that virtually everyone I know who is actually in town," so Charlottesville empties out in the summer because it's a college town. So she said, "Everyone I know who is actually in town was there. I am lucky that my friends, teachers, and I are all okay. I'm still processing all of this, but I am so utterly grateful right now to so many people willing to stand up for what is right." And I think that's great. I think that showing up is a big part
yes.
of activism. And, it's really heartening to hear that so many of Kelly's friends and family and community members that she knows was there. And actually, this weekend, there were a lot of sort of rallies in solidarity with Charlottesville across the nation. And, there was one in LA that I went to, but the one in DC, did you see the one in DC?
Yeah.
It was like a whole, like droves of people. And they were chanting really, really beautiful things. And yeah, I mean, that's a big part is if you're able, I know there are people who, might have a chronic illness or have a disability who aren't able to physically be there, but if
right.
you are able to be there physically, just showing up is a great thing to do.
And it is a wonderful thing to be grateful for.
All right, Devin, so it's Monday, and we have retitled this from the Donald Trump Dishonor in Dick Watery to just Dick Water of the Week.
Yes.
We felt like it was simpler.
Yes.
So let's just cut to the chase. It's fucking Dick Wad. So who is our Dick Wad? We have a dishonorable mention.
Right, and then a Dick Wad. Mm-hmm. So our dishonorable mention is Republican Representative Buddy Carter.
Ugh.
What an asshole. That name is even like asshole-y.
I know.
Like, Buddy like Biff and Chip and Buddy.
Exactly. If like a Buddy Carter, I'd be like, my money is on you're probably an asshole.
Asshole, right. So this is the same dickwad who recommended that someone, quote, snatch a knot in Lisa Murkowski's ass.
Oh, yeah, it's that guy.
So
fucking A.
So you know that his dickwadery didn't start or end there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, no.
That wasn't the beginning or the end of that.
It's never is. This is when they're on this list, this is never their first rodeo.
Oh, exactly.
Never.
100%.
So Jezebel obtained a video from one of his recent town halls where someone inquired about Georgia's rape kit backlog. So as of January 2017, it includes over 10,000 untested
right,
kits.
Right, right.
So this constituent asked, what can you do as a congressman to help Georgia process these rape kits? Which is like,
good question.
Good question. Like, solid question. Carter said, quote, there are grants available and we'll do everything we can to help. And then he laughed after saying, unless you're a sanctuary city.
What the fuck?
So, yeah.
What? What?
I mean, like, I don't even work, like,
Well, I think even this constituent, or no, a constituent named Catherine Shelton, so she was the one who was videotaping this town hall, she followed up and asked, like, a couple minutes later, she's like, were you serious about the Sanctuary City, Mark? Or was that a quote-unquote joke? Like, you wouldn't provide grants to test rape kits if it was a sanctuary city? And then our least favorite person, Buddy Carter, responded, no, we do not. I voted for a bill that does not allow federal law enforcement grants to go to any sanctuary cities. I was very serious about that. And then Shelton said, do you feel like that serves your constituents? And he said, yes.
Oh, good. So he not only is he a dickwad, but he's also a dickwad who doesn't understand
anything.
Great. Good to know. And also, just by the way, at least 33 states have considered legislation this year aimed at undercutting sanctuary city policies, which immigration and law enforcement experts say actually undermines public safety by redirecting resources and severing ties with potential witnesses to crimes. And then, of course, like rape kits, like dealing with rape kits. So not only is it morally abhorrent, but it's actually just fucking ineffective. So,
but like, where do the rape kits even come into play with this? You know what I mean?
Why punish rape victims?
That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So like, yes, okay, all these like anti-sanctuary city laws, they are actually ineffective, but I don't understand what that means that you can't test rape kits.
Right. I mean,
what does that have to do with it?
There's a lot of misogyny and xenophobia tied up in Carter's comments, which is par for the course for a Republican Party. But yeah, I mean, the real question is like, how does this serve anything?
Yeah, that was
this doesn't even serve a political point.
That was the correct question. Do you think this serves your constituents? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, yeah, Republicans will double down on their bullshit.
Right.
As we saw with Buddy Carter.
Absolutely.
So that is just the dishonorable mention.
Oh, yeah. Oh, buckle up, kids, because we have a dickwad of the week. Mm-hmm. Sarah, who is our dickwad of the week?
So it's the state of Indiana, actually.
Jesus fucking right. You know how many times we have to award this to entire fucking states?
Well, I know. Because, again, everything that is, you know, happening at state and local levels have a huge impact.
So local politics is sexy.
Sometimes it's bullshit.
Well, sometimes it's bullshit, as we're about to tell you.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because we, as Devin had mentioned before, we just had a guest on last week, Melissa McEwen, who is, you know, a Hoosier. And she called the state in our interview the conservative legislation lab.
Which is my favorite saying.
It's like a perfect way to say it. So Indy Star, which is one of the newspapers out there, they had an investigation that found that state and local Republicans have expanded early voting in GOP-dominated areas and restricted it in Democratic areas. And the years covered in this investigation are 2008 to 2016.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, so like when we get down to the actual data, the results are very telling. Mm-hmm. So Hamilton County, which is a GOP stronghold, saw a 63% increase in absentee voting from 2008 to 2016, while Marion County, which is a Democratic area that has a large Black population, saw a 26% decrease.
Jesus fucking Christ. And absentee ballots are actually used at early voting stations as well. Yeah, so it's not just absentee, but it's also early voting.
That's why they were saying, that's why they were looking at absentee voting.
Right,
because
right.
That shows, that indicates like what's happening with the early voting patterns. Other central Indiana Republican strongholds, including Boone, Johnson, and Hendricks counties, also have added early voting sites and enjoyed corresponding increases in absentee voter turnout.
I feel like we talked about this in our last episode, but like when you make it easier to vote, people vote. And when you make it harder to vote, people don't vote. Well, like, this is not complicated math.
And it's so, and I think what you're referring to is our Patreon
episode. Oh, was that? Okay.
We talked about it on
Patreon. They all blur a little bit.
But yes, I mean, it's bananas that voting, making voting easier is a partisan issue.
Right.
The reason why it's a partisan issue, and again, this ties back to all these Republican assholes speaking out about Charlottesville and like against white supremacy. I'm like, but you motherfuckers legislate white supremacy.
Right.
Like you make it harder for people of color to vote. And you do that on purpose because they tend to vote Democrat and you want to stay in power. Like this, again, none of this happens in a vacuum.
Right.
And actually four attempts to expand early voting in Marion County, which is the more Democratic, they've been approved by Democrats but blocked by the county's lone GOP representative on the elections board. And Marion County Clerk Beth White said, quote, it is a deliberate attempt by certain people in our government to make voting hard, which is
certain people.
Fact check, true.
So, like I sort of alluded to, we talked about voting rights in our last Patreon bonus, not the last episode, and how the DOJ, sorry, recently sided with Ohio in a case that could allow states to cancel registrations for voters who fail to cast a ballot over the course of several elections.
So not only do state and local politics matter.
Right.
But what happens at the federal level obviously matters.
Again, do elections have consequences?
Elections have motherfucking consequences. The point of voting is to produce policy outcomes.
Do we care about your feelings?
No one cares about your feelings. Vote for Democrats.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Jesus fucking Christ. So we don't have a racist-ass Jeff Sessions leading the DOJ who should never be there. But yeah, like, stories like that kind of flying below the radar. And it has a it could have a huge impact on future elections because... You know, just some background on Ohio. So Ohio has purged 2 million voters from 2011 to 2016, more than any other state, including 1.2 million for infrequent voting. So basically what the DOJ is setting with Ohio on is if someone doesn't vote in a couple of elections, then they get purged from the rolls.
Which is so... Look, voting is not a use it or lose it situation.
Right.
It is.
It shouldn't be.
It's a right. Mm-hmm. For the love of God, it's a right.
It's a bedrock of democracy. And, you know, actually, Reuters analysis found that since 2012, Ohio voters in Democratic-leaning areas were twice as likely to be removed than voters in Republican-leaning areas. So again, this
shock.
I know. Again, this is happening by design. This is by design. This is part of how Republicans stay in power.
Right.
That and, like, gerrymandering, all that bullshit.
Right.
All plays together.
Well, and this is why Republican senators coming out against white supremacy in Charlottesville is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the GOP practices white supremacy every fucking day when they just enfranchise people of color who tend to vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm. We're just, not to put too fine a point in it, but that's what they do. And that's why I have a hard time, you know, with them coming out against white supremacists.
And getting all these political points for it.
But that's how you, again, that's how you legislate.
Okay, Sarah, so last but not least, let's talk about some action items. So things that Hellions can do after they listen to the show.
Yeah, so we kind of alluded to this when in our Charlottesville section, but we wanted some action items. So things that you can think about, especially as white people. So Brittany Packnett wrote something for Vox in November that is still quite relevant, and it's called White People, What is Your Plan for the Trump Presidency? And she had a few different calls to action. The first one was learn to observe supremacy. She said, quote, before you confront supremacy, you must first learn to see it. You know it when someone paints a swastika, but can you see it when it shows up quietly and pervasively throughout culture? So that's like the first thing. She said, quote, learn to confront supremacy. Become an accomplice, not merely an ally. I like that word.
Oh, me too, accomplice.
I've heard that before, and I like that. She says, quote, the work of freedom is messy, dangerous, and intentionally uncomfortable. Here's a simple test. If the action step you're taking isn't really costing you your comfort, chances are you're not doing enough. Getting in the way to protect the vulnerable, building something new that empowers the marginalized, and endangering yourself to shield others are the acts of an accomplice. We need no more allies. We need accomplices.
Right.
And it's interesting because something that I've just heard since the election, especially in, you know, throughout the first 7 months or so of Trump's presidency is it's like white people get your people.
Right.
That's what I hear. It's like, go talk to your people because you are in a position where you can actually make an impact and you have access to certain things. And like, you know, we've talked about this before a lot of times on this podcast, but like 53% of white women voted for Trump. And like, there's a lot of work to do there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And then her last call to action was become a resource, not an overseer. She said, quote, I cannot tell you how many offers I've received for help that come with a list of commands for exactly how we should do our work. White people who ensure people of color have access to capital we have been historically cut off from can be helpful. But if your offer of support comes with a need to set my agenda, that's not support, that's control.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And then you can subscribe to a service like Safety Pin Box, which is a good example of financially supporting Black women's labor and taking actionable steps to be a true accomplice. So you can find them at safetypinbox.com.
Yeah, and
we'll link to it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. So that's just one way.
One way.
That's just one example. And then, so speaking of funds, if you're in a position to put your money where your mouth is, Sarah Benincasa had a great post about local Charlottesville groups you can support. So she included stuff like the local NAACP chapter, the Black Student Alliance at UVA, Charlottesville Pride, Planned Parenthood South Atlantic, the National Organization for Women in Charlottesville, Meals on Wheels of Charlottesville, African American Teaching Fellows, the Brody Jewish Center of the University of Virginia, and Congregation Beth Israel. So that's just a few of the organizations you can donate to. And again, we'll link to her posts in our show notes. There's also a couple different GoFundMes. So there's a victim relief GoFundMe that you can donate to at gofundme.com/united-seville-victim-relief. When we checked, they were about $10,000 away from hitting their goal, which is $50,000.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were close to hitting it.
Yeah, at this point. And then a black man who was beaten by white supremacists named Dre Harris, who we referenced at the beginning earlier in the show, also has a GoFundMe. So gofundme.com/I-was-beaten-by-white-supremacists, which is a very powerful thing to say. Mm-hmm. His goal is also $50,000, and the last time we checked, he was about $15,000 away from meeting it.
Yeah, so make sure, if you're able to support the victims mm-hmm. of these horribly violent acts, and to just think, you know, and this is something that we think about a lot, just think about, if you're a white person, just think about how you can be an accomplice.
Yes.
Not just an ally. Be an accomplice, and if you're uncomfortable, you're probably Good. Doing something right.
Yeah. All right, so that is it for us. We, you know, it was quite a weekend, and it's been a packed show, but we are going to have our Patreon interview with Olivia St. Clair. If you're a supporter of $5 up and more, you'll get access to that. Otherwise, we will see you back here on Thursday. For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/HellbentPodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent. ¶¶